Welcome to the Midday. I'm Norman Gilliland, and today we're broadcasting live from, well, we're always live, but today particularly live and lively, because we're on stage here at Lawrence University in Appleton with some fabulous young talent. We're going to have three ensembles. We're going to have piano, we're going to have string quartet, and we're also going to have a bluegrass band. Today I'll be asking the quiz question a little early to work around the music, so that'll probably be around 12:25, but I will be asking it again at 12:35 or so, 12:40 maybe. And it's a nice short one today, so you'll have a pretty good shot at winning a valuable prize before all is said and done. And now, let's bring out our first performer, and he's a pianist. His name is Jonathan Fagan, and he is ready to play right here. So we're going to find out a little bit about Jonathan and a little bit about what he's going to play.
Sure.
And how long have you been here at Lawrence, Jonathan?
This is my third year, so I'm a junior.
And so should I ask, how many hours a day do you practice?
That's a dangerous question. I always just like to say as much as I can, but, you know, playing with ensembles and rehearsals and all that adds up. Probably around 4 or 5 hours a day.
4 or 5 hours a day.
I try.
Wow, yeah. Can you get it up to 5 or 6? That really doesn't sound like quite enough, 4 hours.
You know.
You do what you can. If you were, regardless of the audience here and both television, this will be broadcast a little later on Wisconsin Public Television, and regardless of the audience here in the hall and out there listening on the radio, if you were sitting at the piano like this and were just going to put your fingers to the keys, what would you most likely be playing?
I'm not sure, and that's the fun of it, I guess, but I just love improvising, even taking segments of classical pieces I'm working on, playing them in different ways. I'm a jazz and a classical pianist, so that makes it a lot of fun. I just, you know, take a Bach hymn tune and put it in different keys and try doing different things with it.
Bach liked doing that too.
I know.
Good company.
That's the great part.
Is there a way to teach improv, or is that totally up to you?
There is. Our jazz faculty has really shaped the way that I think about that, but you know, you introduce little boundaries, little boxes, I like to call them, that you're in. You know, just improvise using, you do this with little kids all the time, improvise using the white keys, improvise using the black keys, improvise using different rhythms. And you just start to build these little structures that you play with and kind of grow out of. And then ideally when you sit down, you've got all of that internalized and you just play and you don't think, you know. It's kind of a cliche. All the jazz musicians say, "I'm not thinking, I'm just feeling, man," or whatever. But
I'm in the zone.
I'm in the zone, but that zone comes out of a lot of thoughtful work, and that's what I love about this place, is that you get to explore all of that.
What do you learn from your fellow students here at Lawrence?
What do I not learn from my fellow students at Lawrence? Just hearing them. Hearing the different ways they talk about music, they approach music, they perform. Everybody comes from really different backgrounds here, and I think that helps. Everybody has, people go to summer festivals and they come back with these perspectives. I have a lot of students in my studio went to Spain last year, and they came back and studied with teachers there, and now in our studio comments, they're writing all these things that they learned in Spain. Just talking to them and getting to know them as people too.
What about the competitive aspect of being in a place like Lawrence?
You know, I don't think about that nearly as much as I thought I would when I first got here. It seems like a really friendly environment, and you know, even in the case where there's a competition and we're all playing, everybody's hearing each other's pieces. We're encouraging each other. We view this as a team effort, I think.
Well, that's certainly a great way to look at it, and you'll probably learn a lot more that way.
I think so.
Now, about Frédéric Chopin, he is one of those composers who's really a pianist in a way. And he wrote things for orchestra, but they're essentially accompanying the piano, don't you think? Those concertos, for example.
Oh, yeah. No, and even in solo repertoire, you know, our teacher always has us writing, okay, this is a horn here, this is a... And then I know he loved to go to the opera. So all bel canto style opera, that gives you a lot of insight into how he's thinking and how he's writing too.
Now, are you going to be playing the Opus 10, number 3, etude? Remember that right?
Yep.
Which is one which really does sing. In fact, in the 1950s, there was a pop song put to this.
Really?
Yes, and
I did not know this.
Yes.
I'll have to go look it up.
Yes, I can provide you a copy of that as soon as I remember the name. I don't know. No, you're all way too young out there to
have to bring it into my jazz combo.
Piece, but, well, there you go.
You know?
Yeah, it's quite possible. But yes, it's a very songful etude. It's one of my personal favorites too.
Yeah.
And so, anything else we should be listening for when we hear it?
Just enjoy it. Hopefully.
Can't have better advice than that. Here you go. Jonathan Pagan with Chopin's Opus 10, number 3.
Thank you.
When did you discover Chopin?
When did I discover Chopin? I don't know if I would count when I was younger and just playing little things as discovering Chopin. I think when I got to college, I started to really get it about what he was writing and who he was. But then again, I probably still don't get it.
There's so much to get.
Exactly.
What about jazz?
What about jazz?
When did you discover jazz? And what is jazz, anyway?
It's changed
so much over the years.
I think we started my jazz history class with that exact question. The best answer, which one of my student friends, who actually is here, is he described jazz as a feeling. And I think that's really accurate. I think it's just... you can go into the roots. It's from New Orleans. It's from a tradition. A lot of horn players, a lot of piano players.
Even some banjo players early on.
Yeah. Banjo. Still love banjo.
Yeah, me too.
But I think it's just this feeling of freedom within a structure, of a class coming out of oppression and trying to make something new. Then again, you could say that about a lot of popular music. So
there's just something elusive about jazz.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, what about this piece that you have? Is this an improvisation?
Well, I wrote a tune over the summer, and it started with a melody. I was playing around with some harmonies that my piano teacher gave me and that I liked, and it just kind of came from there. I'm not sure.
Well, just... That's what a lot of composers would say.
Yeah.
And what's the name of this piece?
It's called Phase Change. After I was thinking about, I think it was my high school chemistry class, they had this beaker full of some kind of liquid, and it just kind of boiled very slowly and turned from one form into another. And I was thinking about, that's how people are too, kind of.
That is so
true.
We
change very gradually. And
sometimes we boil over. Phase Change.
All right.
Thank you.
Phase Change with Jonathan Fagan. Just another question or two before you go. I know you've got another 4 hours of practice again, right?
Yeah, I got to be off. No, I'm good.
If somebody were to say to you, oh, you know, your style of piano jazz reminds me of so-and-so and so-and-so, you might say that's probably because I spent a lot of time listening to...
Probably my teacher here, Bill Carruthers, actually. He's seriously one of my favorite pianists to listen to. Bill Evans, probably.
Certainly one of the great classic jazz pianists, Bill Evans,
yeah. Yeah. I remember, I think his CDs were the first thing I got. I think my mom and I went to Tower Records or something back at home and just bought a stack of about 7 of them, and I haven't stopped listening to them since, so that might have something to do with it.
I venture to say it does, and one of these days somebody could be standing right there and saying the same thing about Jonathan Fagan, don't you think? Wasn't he great? Gosh. Well, we're going to have more music. We're going to have a string quartet. We'll have that bluegrass band and all of that yet to come during the midday. And a little bit earlier than usual, I'll deliver today's midday 12:30 quiz question to right after this. On our stage now, as you can see, it's a string quartet. Awesome. And how are you all today?
Great. Thank you.
I didn't hear anything from you.
Doing wonderfully.
Well, I'm awfully happy to hear that. And let's see. Let's start with the viola. Let's see who raises his hand. Okay. The viola. I mean, you have to wonder, isn't the repertoire for the viola so much more limited than it is for the violin?
There's definitely not a lot of classical repertoire out there for, like, concertos with, like, Haydn, Mozart, Beethoven, any composer like that, but as we progressed to like the 20th century, we got Hindemith, Shostakovich, you know, a lot of really great composers out there that they gave the viola a lot of really great stuff. So there's a lot of repertoire out there that a lot of people actually don't know about. So
you're living in the right century.
Yes. Yes.
And our viola player, by the way, is Kyle Stalsberg. And so let's go a little higher. No, let's go lower. What do you say? Let's go lower and pick up our cellist. At least I assume you're a cellist. There's no instrument listed next to your name for some reason. And you're... It's a sign of your modesty, I'm sure, as a performer. Maria Antonia Longhi, did I get that right?
Maria Antonia, yeah. Maria, it's fine.
I like that, Maria, okay. And what about your cello? How long have you been bonding with it?
I've had her since, like, my sophomore year in high school. We're, like, best friends. She's a sweetie. Yeah, she's really nice. I mean, yeah. So
She's really nice. It is a female instrument, do you think?
I'm thinking. I think she looks it and she sounds it and she's... I don't think she needs a name. She's just, like, she's great. She's great.
There's a wonderful story I wish I could remember better about the cellist Lynn Harrell. He was, what shall we say, in a controversy with a certain airline that will remain nameless because they...
He messed up his cello?
No, actually, they took away his, whatever you call them, companion flyer miles for his cello because they said, it's not a person. And so he did this very funny video about tricky he is as an individual and not to be trusted because he travels, you know, with this cello that doesn't even eat lunch on the airplane. But have you had travels with your instrument?
No, actually, I am afraid to take her on the plane, so we drive from New York every time we come here. So it's a nice bonding experience, I think. It's a nice 18-hour road trip. Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah, favorite cello repertory?
My favorite concerto is Dvorak, because the second movement is like the most beautiful thing in the world. I always cry. It's so emotional. It's so nice.
You cry when you're playing it?
Oh, I don't know. Not when I play it. When somebody professional. Yeah.
When you get to the right point, though, you'll know, won't you? When you're crying, you'll know I'm in the groove or in the zone, as the jazz players would say.
In the zone, yeah. Yeah.
Well, we'll look forward to hearing some Haydn cello. Haydn wrote concertos for the cello, right? Yeah. Have you played those yet?
No, I don't really. I was going to say I don't really like Haydn, but I was like, wait, we're playing Haydn. No, I just.
That's for another show.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, we'll expect you to do your best anyway. Haydn, even if it is Haydn. And now we have two violinists, and you are Sophie Yang. You are. Thank you. And have you been playing the violin from a very, well, you're still at a very early age, but I mean an even earlier age?
Mm-hmm. I started when I was 6 and a half.
Did you enjoy it when you were 6 and a half? How did it come about that you were taking violin lessons at that age?
I actually wanted to play the piano when I started, and my mom was like, we don't have space, we can't buy one. So she's like, pick something smaller. And we went to the symphony a lot, and they had a petting zoo, and I liked the violin. So it's actually worked out really well.
You know, we had a Wisconsin Public Radio petting zoo a couple of years ago at one of the art fairs on the square in Madison. It was absolutely fascinating to see little kids, younger than 6 and a half, some of them, pick up these instruments and just have the knack. You know, they'd never picked it up before, and they just had this ability, you could tell, because for one thing, they could play better than I could, and they never even touched the instrument before. It's just a fascinating thing how some people just take right to it. Do you felt that then worked that way for you?
I don't know. I don't really remember. It was just something that became a part of my life every day, and it gradually felt more and more natural and more of a part of myself. So,
how do you feel about Haydn?
Okay, actually, when we first picked this to start with, I was like, I don't know. But I really like it now.
Mm-hmm. You've bonded?
Yes.
Well, I've bonded with Haydn. And that means that you're so... that means that you're Andrea Johnson.
I am. Last time I checked.
Let's see. In this configuration, would you be first or second violin?
First.
And what does Haydn give you as a first violinist that he wouldn't give to the second violinist? Anything?
All of the hard stuff.
is that true?
Sure.
We'll talk about it later. I heard her say that. She gets a moment. Everybody gets at least a moment. Haydn was very egalitarian that way. And you're playing one of the last of the Haydn string quartets. It's Opus 76, number 5. I think there are only a couple more after this out of the many that he wrote. And so this is Haydn after many years of developing this form. And he developed them more than any other composer, Haydn did, because he wrote so many of them over such a long period of time. And so you're going to be playing the last two movements of the Opus 76, number 5, and it's a minuet and finale. Does that make sense? Okay. So, and do you have a name for your quartet? It's Quartet Mask, right? And just one quick question: you play often together? I mean, have you been playing for a year or two together since you've been at Lawrence?
Yes, this is our second year together.
Okay, great. Quartet Mask with the last two movements of Haydn's Opus 76, number 5. Thank you. Quartet Mask, that's the name of the ensemble, and that was two movements from Haydn's Opus 76, number 5, and it sounded to me like you liked Haydn just fine. So we'll look forward to your next performance. We'll have a repeat of our 12:30 quiz question and hear from our final ensemble for this performance from Lawrence University. All of that after this here on WPR. I hope this name doesn't have anything to do with your being on this show, the Involuntary String Band. Who's the spokesperson for this band? You're closest. You can explain that.
Sure.
And you are?
I'm Martha. Well, I guess the origin of our name came, we were unsure about what we were going to name our band, so we actually went on bandnamegenerator.com.
Come on. You got to be kidding.
Yes, that's how we got it. But it stuck. So, yes.
Well, it raises questions, so I'll give you credit for that. And did you form this band since Lawrence? Let me turn over here to our bass player. We have heard, by the way, that was Martha McDonald, who was one of the fiddlers with the group. But now we have Nick Allen, who is the bass player, bassist. Do you play also classical bass or jazz bass, or are you just a bluegrass guy?
No, we do, all of us do a bit of all sorts of things. I play a lot of classical repertoire in school, and I'm also in another bluegrass band, and me and Alon, we play in a funk band together, so there's a ton of stuff that we all do.
And you play the electric bass also, as gives you a lot of other stuff to play?
Yeah, I play the electric bass too.
So it's all music to you. And over here we have, which is, a very traditional-looking guitar to me, is, and you are?
Ilan Blanc.
And Ilan, anything special about your instrument and how you got into bluegrass? Is it maybe more of a natural for a guitarist than it would be for a bassist?
Well, maybe, but not in my case. I'd actually never had any exposure to bluegrass or traditional old-time music, and at the beginning of last year, they were looking to start a group, and I happened to be a guitarist who was around, but I've had a great time learning and playing with them.
And what kind of things do you play with a bluegrass group as a guitarist? Anything you want?
I don't know if we would necessarily... Bluegrass is a really easy way to describe music with this sort of instrumentation, but we sort of try to do some different things, so it gives me a lot of flexibility to kind of add some different inflections along with everyone else.
So who's the loudest in this group? And is there anybody that you have to kind of like play to get over? The bass, of course, is a big instrument, but you're usually relegated to the background. And the guitar, you're in front, but you are, have to compete with a couple of, a mandolin, and we'll get to the mandolin in a minute. So how do the dynamics work?
Well, we usually try to be pretty conscious of how we're playing. I think probably the loudest would be the mandolin and the violin, just because they're the highest pitch and just because of the violin's tension compared to mine.
And that brings us over to, we have to ask about, this is Davey Harrison, who's playing the mandolin. There's so many different kinds of mandolin, but you have a very small one there.
Yeah.
How did you get into bluegrass? Mandolin isn't the first instrument you'd think of for an entree into this, is it?
Oh, well, actually, the founder, really what everyone kind of thinks of as the founder of bluegrass, is Bill Monroe, and he was a mandolin player. So really, this is the instrument that kind of pulled it all together. It was a combination of the fiddle tunes from Ireland, so taking that and then taking some of the roots music, the slave music from the South, and really just kind of a massive melting pot of all these different styles. It's like Celtic music with African beat, really, So... Yeah, I originally fell in love with the mandolin, as I think a lot of people my age who play this instrument did, with players like Sam Bush and Chris Thiele. It's a really good time to start getting into this instrument with so many people blazing trails. Like, Chris just won the MacArthur Fellowship last year, so it's getting a lot of fantastic exposure. And you sort of, if you play this particular style of mandolin, which is the American style of mandolin, it's kind of a prerequisite that you start getting into the bluegrass community, and it really is infectious. So it sort of came to me after I fell in love with this instrument.
So you've got a couple of food-related pieces here. Am I reading this right? I'm not sure who would be responsible for that, but you get to eat after the show. How's that, everybody? And so this first one is called?
Chinkapin Pie.
All right, and Chinkapin in 20 words or fewer is?
It's a type of bird, so. Yeah.
Okay.
I guess a bird made into a pie.
Oh, like those famous blackbirds of the nursery rhyme. Well, here it is, Chinkapin Pie, and this is the Involuntary String Band. Well, as I guess they might say in bluegrass circles, that was mighty tasty. And now we're going to wrap things up with, it's actually a vocal.
Yes.
And who are our vocalists?
Toby, Alon, and I.
Okay. And so that means everybody has to play relatively quietly so they don't drown out the vocalists. Is that the trick here?
Yes.
That's it? Okay, and this is You Are What You Eat.
Shop, but if you are what you need
and you eat how you feel,
then I don't feel so good, cause I'm a hypocrite. It makes me sick, worst of all, I'm full of it.
I wanna fix what I preach, so eat what you believe.
I think it's time for me to put my money in my ways.
Not
the same, never been about the fame, for the cash, want it bad, but there is no one to blame, cause I not but if you are what you eat,
and you eat how you feel,
and I don't feel too good, cause I'm a hypocrite, it makes me sick, worst of all, I'm full of it, and I wanna vex and I preach,
so eat what you believe,
I think it's time for me to provide money, for my lives.
Well, it sounded pretty voluntary to me. That was the Voluntary Involuntary String Band, and that's the third of our ensembles and solos for this broadcast from Lawrence University here in Appleton, Wisconsin. And another round of applause for all of our performers, if you will.